Welcome to episode 62 of the Strength Through Vulnerability podcast. Let's get into it. Welcome back to another episode. It is so good to be back with you. And if you celebrated Christmas, I hope you had a very Merry Christmas. If you're celebrating Kwanzaa, Happy Kwanzaa. I'm so excited to be talking with you again this week. I have a really fun conversation with a consulting hypnotist named Doug Sands. This conversation was super neat. He explains so much about what hypnosis is really all about and how it can actually be used to help us conquer our fears and anxieties. And it's not always just making people cluck like chickens or bark like dogs, which I think is what many of us think of hypnosis being. So he shares a lot more of the intricacies of hypnosis. He leaves us with a couple tools that anyone can use to help treat our anxieties, and he even shares his story of what led him into this line of work. So this interview, this conversation is full of amazing information and entertainment. Doug is clearly, he knows a lot and he communicates very well. So I think that you all will really enjoy this conversation, and it's coming at you right now. Doug, it is so good to see you and to talk to you again, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good. It's good to be back.
I love it. I love it. Can you start off by sharing with the listeners a little bit about yourself? What do you do? Because it's pretty unique and it's very interesting.
You can say that again. I am a hypnotist, and I work with people all around the world to help them overcome their fears and their anxieties. And this stemmed from my own life because I struggled with mental illness from depression and anxiety. And as with a lot of therapists and people who work with mental illness, it's become kind of a personal thing for me.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I definitely, you know, I feel like the more and more that I talk to people and interview people, I think it's very, very rare, it may be impossible for people to get in the mental health line of work without having some sort of personal experience, you know, whether it be them struggling with something or them having many people around them who have struggled with something. And so I want to dive deeper into, well, actually, let me back up a second. I want to hear more about your story, but before we go there, can you share a little bit more about what you do as a hypnotist? Because I think a lot of people, when they hear hypnotist, they think about that funny person who is at their like graduation party and they're like making people do crazy stuff, but that's not what all hypnotism is.
Yeah. That's typically the first thing I have to do with a client the first time is debunk the myths of hypnosis, because everyone thinks that hypnosis is one, it's mind control, and that two, hypnosis is going to make you do something that's negative in your life, because we've all seen the comedy show of someone barking like a dog or clucking like a chicken. But hypnosis is so much more than that. Hypnosis at its base level is simply communicating with a person's unconscious mind. And a person's unconscious has two goals: to keep them safe and to keep them happy. And so if at any time a hypnotist gives a suggestion that someone's unconscious does not agree with, their unconscious is not going to accept it. It's probably going to bring them out of that trance. And where we see this on stage shows is that the people on that stage they're not being manipulated. There was that unspoken agreement that by coming on this stage, they knew they were probably going to do some ridiculous things. And so that's what they do. When someone comes to me for change work, for relieving something, an issue in their life, they don't expect to bark like a dog or cluck like a chicken in the session. And so they don't. What we focus on instead is breaking through those mental barriers and really making some rapid changes at the unconscious level.
Super interesting. And, you know, one of the things that stuck out to me was what you're talking about our subconsciouses do. And you said it was two things. One is to find ways to make ourselves happy. And then the other one, what, can you remind me what the other one was? It's slipping from my mind.
It's to keep us happy and to keep us safe.
There we go. And to keep us safe, of course. So that immediately stuck out to me, because I think so many people out there are like, but I don't feel happy. If that's what my subconscious is designed to do, why isn't it working? Broad of a question as that is, because there's so many things that go into that. From your work, what have you seen are some of the things that keep us from you know, really fulfilling that happiness that the subconscious is looking for?
I would say that what the unconscious mind thinks will make us happy is not always what will make us happy. Mm-hmm. To take this a bit deeper, when I work with depression, when someone is talking about suicidal ideation, you might think, why on earth would anyone's unconscious ever allow that to happen? I mean, you're not keeping yourself safe. But the reason it allows that is because some part of their unconscious mind has accepted this false belief that they are not happy and they will never be happy again. And so the only cure essentially to that route of unhappiness is to end one's life. And so removing that limiting belief is really the first step of that thing. But talking about the happiness of your unconscious mind, it's the reason that your unconscious mind likes sweet things. I mean, we are living in a society where we don't really need the sweet things anymore. It's not really critical for our caloric intake, mm-hmm. but our body still wants those things, and it still lights up our brain and gives us that happiness jolt when we have those things.
It's really funny that you bring up that example, because just today I was thinking about, you know, I've got a major sweet tooth. It's almost like, you know, in the beginning of the day, I'm usually craving more savory foods, but then the afternoon comes around, I want something sweet. And then once I have something sweet, then, oh, it's just like all hell breaks loose, you know? And so I was actually thinking to myself today, I'm like, you know, the reason that we probably enjoy the flavor of this sweet stuff is because back when we didn't have food accessible to us all the time, the sweet things were the things that were going to provide us energy right in that moment. So it sounds like that's kind of what you were getting at.
Yeah. The unconscious mind, you know, it comes from that lizard part of our brain, that first part that showed up in evolution. It's that part of us that jerks our hand back from a hot stove before we even feel the pain, or it's the part that jerks us out of the street before we see the bus that was about to hit us. That's the same basic concept. And hypnosis just takes that one step further in saying that your unconscious mind is not completely stupid. It's not like a knee-jerk reaction completely. It's actually trying to work for your benefit. And one of the huge things that I have to establish with my mental, you know, people who come to me for mental health, is that your brain is not working against you. It's trying to help you. It's running these patterns that in the past probably have worked. And so the brain, you know, like many animal or any system, it doesn't really like to try new things if it doesn't have to. Mm. And so it sees this program that worked maybe a couple times in the past. And it says, even though this program isn't exactly a right fit, I know with 100% certainty that it's worked so far, and let's just keep doing it.
Mm. I think that's really interesting. You bring up a really important thing, I think, in the sense of we need to learn that our brains are trying to do their best. They're trying to do what's best for us. And that was actually something really powerful for me with OCD, which can be incredibly debilitating, is learning to really value the OCD. It doesn't always play a role anymore, but learning how OCD was key a lot of times in past lives for people to really protect themselves, make sure that they have everything gathered that they need. Like, attention to detail is huge. And so I think that's really, really interesting and very cool. It's wild to me how so much of this is driven by subconscious beliefs that we don't, to go along with subconscious, we don't consciously know that we have them. And so to get to the heart of these subconscious beliefs, in order to rewire them, we need some sort of intervention with somebody, right? Like, we need to either work with a therapist, a counselor of some sort, a hypnotist. It takes going to somebody to help us rewire those things, or just dig deeper and figure out what those are. Without, you know, this obviously, like, I want people to support you and go to you for help, but without giving up too much information, what are some things that you would do with a client to help them dive deeper into what their subconscious beliefs are, what might be driving whatever they're struggling with?
So in any session, the first thing that we do is, you know, get them to that deep, relaxing hypnotic state. And then once you're down there, you have a couple different avenues that you can go to. The ones that I typically use are changing memories And when a person accesses any memory at any time, it changes that memory. It literally restructures the proteins in your brain that house that memory. And so what we do, we basically regress them back to that point they were at when the problem first arose. We call it the initial sensitizing events. And by changing the memory of that sensitizing event, you actually cause a ripple effect that causes the entire thing to crumble kind of on its own. And for an example of that, I give the example often of a client I worked with who had a fear of mountain biking. And when we looked at it, it wasn't what they originally thought, that it was this accident that they had, you know, in the past couple of weeks. It wasn't that. It was this issue they had when they were 6 years old. They fell off their bike because a training wheel broke, and that stuck with them for so long that the triggering event, like three weeks ago, that was only the spark that ignited the tinder. And another route that I often go with people looking, you know, changing with hypnosis is to change in the present and the future. Sometimes people don't want to go back to those negative states and those traumas that they've had for good reason. And so what we do in that case, we change their current beliefs about themselves and about their life. And then we future pace that into their coming up experiences so that they believe that the future is going to go well for them and that the resources they now have will be of benefit for them.
That's super. Can you give a little example for that? Like, what would that look like?
Yeah. Let's say someone came in for a fear of public speaking and they didn't really have anything in their past they wanted to bring up. And so we just looked at it at the present and into the future. We would first break down those limiting beliefs, whether through hypnosis or through other things like energy work and tapping. I bring in some other things, but hypnosis is my main tool. We first remove those limiting beliefs and then we build in that new place. It's like if you have a house on a lot that you want to build on, but this house is just a piece of junk. First, you have to tear down the house, tear up the cement and the foundation it was laid on. And then once you've got the ground smooth again, then you can build the house on top of it.
That's really helpful. I think it's very helpful. It's so interesting how deep this all is. And you said a couple of things again that stood out to me. And one is that with that example you gave of the mountain biker or the person with the fear of mountain biking, there was this trauma that happened years ago, and yet the spark was more recent. I think that's interesting and not necessarily related to our conversation, but often you see athletes tearing their ACL or some other major injury. And it's often that their ACL was basically ready to be torn from another hit. You know, if it's football, it might've been a hit 3 games ago. And now finally that trauma has caught up, sparked, and boom, ACL is officially gone. And then you also had me thinking about how it's wild how many of our subconscious beliefs are developed at such a young age. When you use the example of that happening at 6 years old, I'm like, how many things happened in my life when I was 4, 5, 6, 7 years old that I can't really remember now that are dictating how I'm treating certain circumstances or how I'm handling certain feelings? It's wild. And again, you can't really, it's very difficult to dive into those things on your own. So I think the work that you do is really interesting and really cool. I would love to dive a little bit more into what brought you into this line of work, because, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have heard a little bit of your story already, and it's powerful. So please share.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely did not start life thinking I would be a hypnotist. I grew up in the Midwest in Wisconsin, pretty rural area. And, mental health was always a very big part of my life, even though I didn't realize it, because my mother had actually taken her own life when I was very young. Mm-hmm. And my family, being rural and not very good with their emotions, they never talked about it. They always told me that it was some disease that couldn't be cured. And later, when I developed my own depression, that was really disheartening to hear, because I, you know, internalized that belief that, you know, once I've got it, there's only one way out. And So when I developed that depression, I really had no, words for it. I had no words to express it, no words to bring it up in conversation. And I went to therapy and I went to, I got medication. And for anyone who's curious about that, I don't disparage medication and therapy. I think that hypnosis and medication and therapy, they all have their place because they all help some of us. Mm. And so if that's working for you, go for it. Mm. Back to the story. It wasn't until I started really digging into what was causing my anxiety and my depression that I started making some real changes. I was searching for my purpose. I was in college and I was paying, you know, thousands of dollars. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And so I ended up dropping out and I bounced around the US. I ended up in Maine and then New Hampshire doing some seasonal work. And it was in New Hampshire. I was on the Lafayette Ridge on January 3rd, 2019. And I should not have been out in those conditions because it was a blizzard. I remember standing on the peak and I saw a hiker coming towards me, and it was as if they had materialized out of the fog. They were like a ghost that as they passed, I watched, and like within 10 paces, they had just vanished. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the context of what I was dealing with on that hike. And I got lost and I ended up bushwhacking down this mountain, and night was falling and I was soaked because I was so hot. The snow falling was melting through my coat. And I climbed this hill and fell down twice. And on the third time I fell down again, and I remember pressing my face into the snow and just lying there and essentially giving up. And I had that moment where I realized that no one was going to save me but myself. And, you know, looking back, it wasn't really that thought that got me up on my feet again. It was a really random thought. It was the thought that they wouldn't find my body until spring that really mm-hmm. got me up out of that, because I realized that I have nothing to lose. And as long as I just keep going, I at least have a chance. And so I got up and I kept going. I eventually found a trail and shuffled back to my car. I got back home around like 9 o'clock. And my friend who was working on the local search and rescue said that he was within 15 minutes of calling search and rescue on me. And that experience shook me quite a bit. I thought, you know, I'd go back to living my own life, but I couldn't. I had so much anxiety and so many questions about what I was going to do with the rest of my life that going back to the way I was before was not a possibility. And I discovered meditation through just searching for things to calm my anxiety. And it was like I had discovered food after starving in the desert for years. Mm-hmm. I had just devoured everything I could learn about meditation. And essentially, I discovered hypnosis through a podcast, kind of linking the two between meditation and hypnosis, because the brain waves are actually uniquely linked between the two of them. I discovered hypnosis, and when I started using that on my own issues, on my own anxiety, I was blown away. Even though I had very rudimentary tools, I was still able to make incredible changes. And so I got certified, and now I bring it to people to help them with the same issues that I struggled with.
Wow, man. That's just such a powerful story, and is wild and super relatable, I think, for a lot of people, at least in the lens of, you know, not everybody's almost frozen to death on a mountain. That's absolutely terrifying. I'm very glad you made it. but in the sense of you saying, you know, you were in school and spending thousands of dollars, didn't know what you wanted to do, tons of anxiety, along with all of the things in your family's history, your own history that would be adding to that as well. Reaching this point where, you know, of course you had that traumatic moment, that moment on the mountain where you decided that you couldn't be the same person, the person that you were before. And I think that was it's not as like, it almost sounds like you could basically say, this is the day when this happened, you know, because of your experiences. I would say for me, I don't necessarily have like an exact date, but when I finally did seek out professional help for my anxiety, which I later found out was, you know, I have OCD too, and started diving more into that. The more I learned, the more I healed, the more I was like, no, I can't go back to, you know, not talking. I can't not talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
The rest of my life is going to be you know, whether it's my full-time career or it's my a passion podcast like this, it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of emphasis here. And so I think that's, it's really cool, man. When there's a life experiences, when there's a story that really drives you to doing something that you're now passionate about, that's helping you and helping other people, I think that's really all you can ask for sometimes. It's weird how probably the scariest, darkest moments in your life have probably become some of the most important and best parts of your life.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Doug, I want to talk a little bit more about, so you have a podcast. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit more about what you're doing over there, because it's with hearing your story of nearly freezing on a mountain, I think that it's very related. I'd love to have you share some more here.
Absolutely. I run the Making Meaning podcast, and that's where I interview top adventurers about the struggles they've overcome in my life. And to give a little bit of backstory of why I called it that, when I was in therapy with my first depressive episode, my therapist said one thing that really stuck with me the very first, I think it was the first session I had with her. She said that we are meaning-making creatures. And the reality that we create in our heads is not the reality that is objectively all around us. We're telling ourselves truths. And so this podcast, I called it Making Meaning because we are all making our own meaning. Mm-hmm. And whether that's making the meaning of what it is, you know, day to day, our world looks like around us, or the meaning that we want to put back into the world, I think those both tie very neatly under that umbrella. And the other thing is that I interview these people because when I started on my own adventure journey, you know, coming from Wisconsin, there's not a lot of mountainous adventure things to do at all. I was so far removed from them, from where I wanted to be, that I didn't believe it was possible. And only through opening myself up and talking to some of these friends that I had made in my journeys, did I realize that so many of them had struggled with essentially the same problems that I had. They were simply further along in the process. And so that's really what I want to show to people who are listening, to inspire them to take their own steps and continue along that journey.
I love that. That's so cool. And, you know, clearly from all the things that you've said, you are continuing to make your own meaning and you're really living out what your podcast is all about, which is really cool. You shared that you moved at one point to Maine, which is where I'm located, and you were in New Hampshire. And then, you know, a month or so ago when I spoke with you, you were out in Utah, and then now you're in New Mexico. And so like, you're absolutely living a life of adventure while also doing all the things that you're passionate about, be it, you know, skiing, hiking, whatever it is, those things that you enjoy doing, but also the hypnosis and really and meditation and helping other people find these tools and really help them to be them their best selves, which is really a beautiful thing. And you know, Doug, before we start wrapping up, one thing that I love to do is when I have an opportunity to have somebody come on the show, share a little bit about what they do, share their story, it's always good for them to have the opportunity to share some of their knowledge and some let them provide the listeners with some tactics, some tools that they can take away from this conversation today. So, you know, like I mentioned earlier, of course, I want people to support you if they decide that hypnosis is a route that they should take. Definitely, I want them to go to you. But what are some tools that they can do maybe on their own in the meantime to kind of help?
I've got two types of tools that I'll explain here. The first one, if anyone has ever thought about hypnosis or considered it, but hasn't really understood it, I have got what I call Free Hypnosis Fridays on my Instagram. And that's where I give like 15 to 20 minute hypnosis sessions every single Friday. And it's not just me, you know, putting someone in a relaxing state. It's me actually using those same tools and techniques that have been proven that I use in my sessions with my clients, just in a more generalized form. And so that's where I'd start if someone is curious about hypnosis. If someone is dealing with anxiety, I have got on my website the 7 top most effective tools that I use. So when I'm working with someone with anxiety, oftentimes, you know, we don't get it completely done in the first session. To go back to that metaphor of the house, we can tear down the house in the first session, but then we've got to build something up in its place in subsequent sessions. I give them these tools so that they can manage their panic and their anxiety in the meantime. And that's called the 7-day stress-free challenge. If you'd like, I can detail a couple of them. They take, I don't know, 2 minutes on the show if you'd like.
Please go right ahead.
Yeah. The first one is called 7-11 breathing. That's usually where I start people because it's just so simple. Mm-hmm. And this one comes from meditation and yoga. And a lot of people call it different things, from 4-7-8 to elongated breathing. The only concept that runs through all of those things is that you essentially breathe out for longer than you breathe in. So in this, you breathe in for a count of 7, and then you breathe out for a count of 11. And it helps if you purse your lips on the exhale, I found out. What that does, it triggers the vagus nerve in your body, which has parasympathetic control over your heart and your lungs to your brain. And when your brain gets scared, it sends a signal down that nerve to your body saying, we need to act faster, the fight, flight, or freeze syndrome. And what you're doing by slowing down and breathing out longer than you inhale, you are sending a message back up the pipeline and reverse engineering it to your brain to say, hey, we're all right. We can feel calm in this moment. And the other technique that I really love is called peripheral vision. And this comes from a hypnotist out of New York City. Her name is Melissa Tears. And all you do is you take an object in your hand, and before you start, rate where your negative emotion is on a scale of 1 to 10. Typically you do this with anxiety. So you say, like, I don't know, I'm feeling a 7 right now. You take that object and you pass it from hand to hand, crossing the midline of your body. And what this does, it activates both hemispheres of your brain. And that simple discussion between the hemispheres of your brain naturally calms you. And so you do that for, I don't know, 30 seconds, and then you stop, you check in with your body and see where is that on that scale of 1 to 10? Has it gone away? And I encourage, with any of these techniques, always take it to 0. Because if you take it from a 7 down to a 4, that's great. But you're also telling your body that it's okay to just have like a little bit of anxiety. We're really aiming for 0 anxiety, or like just a normal, tolerable anxiety for like the small things that we do need to get done in our lives.
Mm. Wow, Doug, those are really cool. You know, I've heard of the breathing techniques. Like you said, there's a bunch of different names. I think normally I've heard people call it like diaphragmatic breathing. But the peripheral one, I've never heard of that before. That's very cool. So when I'm feeling anxious, be it at work or whenever, I'm gonna give that a shot, dude. I really like
that. Absolutely.
And what's really cool about those two tools that you provided is that, like you mentioned before, so simple. Mm-hmm. Literally anybody can do those. So very cool. I love it. Doug, you know, I'm so grateful for your time coming on the show to not only share those tools, not only talk a little bit about what you do for work, and also break down some of the stigmas or just misunderstandings about what hypnosis is, but also your vulnerability, your willingness to share your story, which, as you know, is a huge part of this podcast. For you to come on and relate to people listening who have maybe lost their mothers and maybe grew up in families that didn't know how to talk about these things, I'm just really grateful for you, because I think that your story is going to connect to a lot of people. So with all that being said, I've been finishing up my podcast with 3 questions that I think have been quite enjoyable, at least for me. So we're going to end with that. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, man. So the first one, I think it'll be pretty easy. It's just, if you could leave the listeners with one message, one anecdote, whether it was explicitly said today or not, what would that be? What do you want them to walk away with?
I would say, I know it sounds cliche to say it, there is hope. And so I'm going to phrase it in a different way. I'm going to say there are so many different tools for managing our emotional states. And like we just described in these two techniques, some of them are so easy to do. Our emotions are just electrical impulses in our brain. And studies have shown they either change or they completely go away within 90 seconds on average. And so I just encourage people to find something that works for them, whether that's hypnosis or these unique tools or medication or therapy. Find something that works for them and stick with it.
I love it. That's fantastic. Second question is, in your own words, how would you define vulnerability?
I would say it's the willingness to show up completely as you are, with all your scars and all your current wounds and all your flaws, whether that's anger or frustration, to just show up completely vulnerable, because that's really when other people feel comfortable enough to show up completely open with you.
It's a great answer. I got to say, before we get to the third question, that's my favorite question in nearly every single episode, because everybody provides a different answer. Yeah. And it's so cool just to hear, what do people believe vulnerability is? And, you know, they're, even though they're different words, they're often all right, which is really neat. But Doug, the last question for you, man, is a fun one. So I'm a big food guy. Can you tell the listeners and me what your favorite food is?
Oh, gosh. It used to be lasagna. So I cook. I really enjoy cooking. And this past winter, I got into making hummus. And hummus is such a delicious and filling thing. And there's so many different ways that you can tweak it into, you know, different ethnicities. I would have to say hummus, because it's just so flexible.
No way. That's so cool, man. One thing that my little sister and I have, so I live with my little sister, and one thing that we've gotten into a little bit over the last few months is chocolate hummus. I don't know if that's weird to you, or if you've made that. What do you think of chocolate hummus?
Oh gosh, I absolutely love that. I make these brownie bites that we keep in the freezer, and it's essentially just black bean hummus that's sweetened with chocolate and other things. Ooh. And I have found that black beans and date syrup really take that flavor to a whole new level. You stick it in the freezer and it's like eating a chunk of brownie, but it's healthy for you.
Oh man. Okay. I'm taking that away. If I'm walking away with anything from this conversation, it's that for sure. No, I'm just kidding. Dude, this has seriously been so good. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Before I officially let you go, please share where people can find out more about you and where they can contact you.
Absolutely. They can find me on my website at anywherehypnosis.com. That Instagram that I mentioned, my handle is at makingyourmeaning.
Perfect. Doug, you're the man. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. You take care. Thank you all so much for listening to this conversation. I really hope that you enjoyed it. Doug is a really interesting dude and he does some really cool work. So definitely go and check out all the stuff he's doing on his podcast. Go check out his website, his Instagram. I'm really grateful that he left us all with some tools that we can use to help us with our own anxieties. And so please, if you give those a shot, I encourage you to give those a shot. DM me, DM him, let us know how those tools worked for you. I know that I would love to hear from you. I know that he would love to hear from you as well. So definitely check those out. If you're looking for a way to support this podcast, please feel free to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if you feel like the podcast deserves it, because that really helps other people to find the show. It helps make the podcast look more legit. So really appreciate you doing that. And just, you know, share this thing with whoever you think would be interested in it, or anybody that you think it would help. That's really what this is all about, is allowing other people to know that they're not alone in whatever they're going through. We're here to provide tools and tactics and stories that are going to help people to start or continue on their healing journey. And I am always going to be encouraging people to embrace vulnerability, because vulnerability is the thing that really brings us all the things that we truly want in life, be it healing, deeper relationships with others, deeper relationships with ourselves, the ability to really figure out what our hearts, desires, and dreams and goals are, and then be able to go and pursue those. All of those things takes being vulnerable and embracing vulnerability. So all of that being said, I appreciate you all so much. Again, I hope that you had a very Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. If you're celebrating Kwanzaa, Happy Kwanzaa. And I hope that you all have a very happy new year. And we'll be back with another episode on January 2nd with my man, Vincent Lancey, to start off the new year. Hope you all are looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to being back with you all. You all take care.